Do we have everybody full commission here? I can't tell for sure. Okay, we are now on agenda item 4, WFW Managed Non-Lethal Pursuit Training Program, and this is a decision. Mr. Panesco, are you with us at the moment?
Yes, Chair, I am. Not in front of the camera quite yet, but I am here.
That's fine. I have a question for the commission and Joe Panesco. It has been brought to my attention that a commission member wants to make a motion. I'm wondering if you all feel that we need to go through the staff briefing prior to the motion. Is that helpful, or do we, because of in the spirit of time, or do we need to hear the motion and go from there? I'm asking for guidance from the commission and Joe Panesco.
Yeah, if you'd like me to go first, Chair, I'm
happy
to jump in. Yeah, so from a legal process perspective, it is optional. There's no legal or rules of parliamentary procedure that dictate the order you choose to proceed. If the motion that a commissioner wishes to suggest or introduce, if it is adopted, if that would preclude the need for further staff briefing, then maybe it would be a more expedient to do it that way. But maybe the staff briefing would better inform the commissioners to consider whatever the motion is. So that's about as specific as I can get with my input on that topic.
Okay, thank you for that. We have two commissioners with their hands up. I was seeking input, so Commissioner Kuntz and then Commissioner McIsaac, please, and then Commissioner Smith.
Chair Carpenter, we've heard so much testimony today and received so many letters recently. I'm of the opinion that we should just move to the motion and end of the day so packed.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. We'll go to Commissioner McIsaac and then Commissioner Smith.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm going to offer an alternative view here. I think it would be good to hear the staff presentation. We have heard a lot of public testimony here this morning. We received a ton of written public testimony that the commissioners have all read between last December and now. There's some changes that the staff is proposing. In public testimony, there were some matters brought up that I would like to have a chance to ask the staff about in terms of a claim of this or a claim of that. If there was a motion to adopt the staff proposal without having the public without having the staff presentation, we might then just have to go back and say to the staff, well, could you speak a little bit more to this alteration and that alteration and why it was there and why not there? I know in public testimony we had some perspective that we should not take any action today. Thinking that somebody might make a motion like that, I think it's also good to hear from the staff first so that we would know whether or not the
John, you're breaking up.
Reasons offered might be explained in the staff. You don't. Okay. And there. Is that a little bit better?
That's yeah. Better.
Done. 1, 2, 3. Okay, sorry. And so we had some public testimony suggesting that the commission should not take any action at all. And once again, I would think that the staff presentation might be an opportunity to explore some of the reasons why. We don't hear from the staff, and we're probably going to call on them anyway during that debate. So it's also a matter of process here where we've got a staff presentation. They've spent some time on it. And having in our preparations for it, I'm sure there are more than one commissioner maybe that might have a question about it. So I think it's good to stick to the program here, and let's hear the staff presentation and ask questions that might clear up whether a motion is it on one hand or the other hand might be good. So that's my perspective. I know we're in a time cramp here, and boy, I guess we'll have to take a harder look at what our time allotments are for these things, for future things like this. But yeah, this is an important matter. It's been delayed already, and so I think we ought to proceed.
Okay, Commissioner Smith, please.
Well, I'm wondering if staff can give maybe a somewhat abbreviated report, maybe focusing on any changes that we might not be aware of. I for one, feel like I, you know, personally have had sufficient briefing. I'm ready to go forward with a discussion amongst the commission, but perhaps it is a good idea to just at least have them go over, you know, some of the highlights. So that's my two cents worth.
Okay, thank you. Becky and Jeff, is that something that you could do, kind of the condensed version? Is that reasonable? I don't hear it. Becky, you're not unmuted, I think.
Uh-oh. Commission Chair, I believe that is something we could very easily facilitate. And I'll work with Becky to see if we can get her sound working here.
Okay. Well, I will honor that request. I wanted to get some commission input, and we've always had staff briefings before we've made decisions, and I didn't want to change that necessarily, but I wanted to get some input from the commissioners. So, all right, Jeff and Becky, take us away, please.
Can everyone hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you. Sorry. Somehow I had a technical issue, and absolutely, I'll give you the highlights of the game, as it were. So let me go ahead and share my screen here very briefly. Let me start that presentation. Can everyone see my presentation?
Yep, looks good.
Perfect. Okay, so I am going to gloss over some things. Obviously, we have an RCW here that is referencing to the creation of this process. This is under 7712077. This, in essence, is the department shall administer this training program. This is what staff is bringing before you today, which is the WDFW public safety response process. And again, I'm sorry if I'm going to gloss over these things. You've had this presentation in front of you, and you can read this at your leisure. But in specific, we're referencing WAC 220-412-130. You've obviously heard a lot of public testimony and received public testimony on this. And based off of that public testimony, or excuse me, I should back up. I created this infographic in a format because I like to look at visually how programs would be run. And since this is a rather complex rule and a complex program, I wanted to provide you with more or less a kind of step-by-step process in how the individuals would be utilized in this program. So again, to give you just a brief overview, there's an enrollment process that's getting into. There is a regional relationship process that they would be working directly with regional staff. And then finally, the training itself and then the reporting requirements. So there is a threefold and to explain more or less how this would be run. To the matter that is required for public comment and due process, wanted to provide you with all of the public comments that were received. As you're well aware, we were receiving public comments no less than 10 minutes ago on this. So just wanted to give you the information that was provided to us directly to staff, and that we received 240 total responses that was in the format of email, and I received one phone call to voice their testimony. That in total had in support of close to 75%, not in support was 21%. And then we did receive other that where the respondent did not provide a stance on the rule or a neutral stance on the rule. Addition in public testimony, as you're aware, we received 23 comments during that period, 9 in support, which was 39%, and then not in support of 12. Which is 52%. the meat of the matter, which is I think what we're all kind of getting to, is the recommended adjustments. So based off of public comment, discussions that were had, and then providing some additional staff recommendations, which are being brought forward to you today, are involving more or less six areas. And so I'll go through these so that everyone is up to speed on what we are presenting. So this is staff recommended adjustments to the WAC that was presented to you. First off, this is specific to further clarify if a firearm is discharged at any point during a training activity, the training pass pass individual will be placed on hold until reinstated by the department captain or area sergeant. So this in essence is to incorporate that WDFW police will investigate the circumstances surrounding that discharge to determine if it was unlawful or the result of not meeting best practices of dog handling. So this is further clarifying, and this was actually in the affidavit or kind of the next step of based off of the program standards that will be in the creation of. So we actually took that from the affidavit and bumped it up into the WAC as further clarification as to the process in which if a firearm is discharged any time during this training period. The next section and I should preface here that there are no changes to the CR 102. These are all recommended adjustments that are additions. So no language is being changed in the CR 102 that was presented to you in December. These are in addition language. So this one is, like I said, another addition. This would be paragraph 5, a non-lethal pursuit training pass program participant who purchases a Cougar harvest tag in Washington State cannot fill a Cougar tag 72 hours before or after a training exercise. This is in congruence with the 72-hour requirement that anyone who harvests a Cougar under the legal hunting activity has to report that to WDFW. So this is, and again, in addition to 3 days before and after, or 72 hours. This next adjustment is in reference to the training program enrollment. There was discussion in regards to the number of applicants that would be allowed into the program. Currently, it states no more than 50, so that is an up to number. We further wanted to clarify that training passes that are issued by the department shall be geographically limited. This again is to justify that this is a statewide program. This is not a specific area or one area will be overlooked in the other. So this is in essence sharing that, sharing the wealth across the state that no more than 9 training passes at a time per region. So we have 6 regions and I'll get to that map here briefly. And then no more than 3 training passes at a time per enforcement detachment. And just so that everyone's aware, as you commissioners know, and even us internally in the staff, we have a lot of maps and how we define what Washington State looks like. And this is how enforcement is structured. So I just want to kind of give you that brief overview so that you have a better clarity of what that means regionally. So obviously we have 6 regions. Each one of those regions has 1 captain. That captain is in charge of all sergeants. The numbers you see before you, those 2, 7, 3, 5, 21, those are all the sergeant detachments. That sergeant is the supervisor of officers within that detachment. So there can be a certain number of officers, roughly 2 to 5 in a detachment area. And also just to preface, Whatcom County up there, that is actually a separate detachment. My map is just outdated, so I just want to clarify that. So this is how we're structured, and this is the way that WAC would then work in this rule language. Furthermore, this is a really big paragraph, but I did want to incorporate it in its entirety. As you see on the bottom, the red section is something that we are incorporating as an addition to. So this would be the new paragraph 11, and this is reference into the captain's discretion to provide the geographic scope of the training area and the time frame with the individual pass holder. So the addition is that the department captain shall restrict training pass scope for certain GMUs, game management units, during big game hunting seasons when prudent. This further clarifies that the captain has the discretion to change that scope. The next one would be number 12, which is any training pass holder engaged in training activities is required to carry either pepper spray or an air horn so that non-lethal means are available to mitigate wildlife interactions. And then this is lastly, number 14, as presented. As best practices in dog handling, training pass holders shall not knowingly engage in the pursuit of spotted kittens or cougars with spotted kittens upon any observation of tracks of more than one cougar or visually observing the presence of spotted kittens during a training exercise. The handler shall terminate the current training pass activity and report the observations to the training area sergeant. Those two will have direct communications during the entirety of their training pass obligations. The sergeant may choose to subsequently limit the future training pass activities in the area. So this is the last recommended adjustment that staff is presenting to you. I hope that I gave you enough information, but didn't go over time. And so with that, I have my recommendation for a motion, but I will send it back to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Becky. Did Jeff have any additional comments at all? I'll just ask if he did. If not,
Commission Chair, no, I don't have any further comments, but I'm willing to answer any questions as they come up.
Okay, always nice to see you. Okay, I guess I have two hands up. Let me get back to it and see what I... Okay, Commissioner Smith, and then I thought I saw Commissioner McIsaac's hand up, but now I don't see you.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. I have my hand up if I can. I'm having trouble seeing it as well.
Okay, Commissioner Smith first, please.
Let me take this opportunity to do a little education. I know that most of you know me and know that right before I stepped into this role, I was executive director of Western Wildlife Outreach, and then my organization concentrates on educating the public, land users, etc., about how to avoid conflicts between humans, livestock, their domestic animals, and large carnivores. And I brought this up with Becky, but this is a can of bear spray. And bear spray is not pepper spray. I've just given this lecture so many times, you know, to those people in the business and in the enforcement business. Pepper spray is that little bottle of personal spray. So if we're going to include this language, we have to use the right terminology. This is bear spray, and it's what it's called professionally, that's how we all refer to it. It actually is licensed by EPA as bear spray. And if we are going to include that language, we also have to include a training provision because you've got to know how to use this. Okay, off my soapbox for right now.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Smith. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, I have a couple of questions for staff on their presentation. One about adaptive management or reporting back to the commission, and the other one about wolves and some of the questions that came up in public testimony about wolves. So I don't know if I'm using the phrase adaptive management properly here, but there's been a lot of public testimony about a variety of things that need to be improved in the program. Don't move forward until you take care of about this. Don't move forward until you adjust this and adjust that. So my question is that if there is a motion that passes today that has these recommended adjustments and maybe some more, and a program goes out and gives it a try. And there's a concern that maybe that it's not going to be working so well. And maybe some of the worries are founded, maybe some of them aren't. So if there hypothetically was a motion that passed and the program started, when would the commission hear back, you know, a year from now or later, as to how it's going and whether or not there has been incidents where it's unsafe to humans, for example. That's one thing that came up in the testimony, or that there's a large number of unexpected lethal situations going on, or that there never has been one firearm that even has gone off during the whole year or 6 months or whatever. So I'm sorry if you kind of got into this back on December 4th on that line of questioning, but what if a motion was to pass, what is the plan for some sort of report back to the commission or a department reacting in an adaptive way, that there are problems that really do need to be fixed before the program continues or something like that? Any comments about that?
Absolutely. Thank you, Commissioner Chair, Commissioner McIsaac. Enforcement informally would plan to present an updated yearly report or informational session to discuss how the project is going or how the process is going. That's something that was already discussed internally. Obviously, as you're very well aware, this is an issue that is ever present and will continue. We want to provide all opportunity for scrutiny, for information to be shared, so that everyone feels comfortable with the process moving forward. And as you stated, if there is or isn't needs to be adjustments necessary to the program itself. If that's something that the commission would like to, I think there's a couple levels. You can request that we have a yearly review or some format of a review if you'd like it to be 6 months, et cetera. You can request that. Again, I'm not the lawyer. I'll ask Mr. Pinesco the director. I'll ask the boss how that process works. But in regards to providing open information or that dialogue to actually review kind of what is occurring, again, if hypothetically we went forward, we can make absolute availability for that. If that's something that you want to incorporate into the rule itself, that this needs to be required as an annual review, again, as the commission, the governing body, you can make that decision. We're at staff happy at any point to discuss how the program is going and in whatever format you'd like it to be presented, either to the commission itself or individually.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you for that. My question about wolves. We heard some public testimony that the program development did not consider the effect on wolves. We heard that you'd need to do a SEPA review because of the listed wolves, that there could be a substantial effect on wolves. And so I wondered, as you've went through developing this, if you could speak to whether or not you've heard a little bit about this, whether or not you have a good feel on whether there would be a significant effect on wolves, I'll start with, did you consider the effect on wolves? And if you did, what's your opinion of that and some of these things we heard in public testimony about the connection to wolves?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. I think that's kind of twofold. One is in reference to, there was a response in regards to the SEPA, a potential requirement of our analysis. And we did get, and I'm just going to pull it up briefly just so that I can make sure that I provide this to you, is that it was a SEPA analysis checklist would be exempt under WAC 226608012C, which it categorically exempts all activities of fire departments and law enforcement agencies except physical construction activity. Additionally, a secondary exemption would apply, which would be number 19 subsequently of that same WAC, for procedural actions, as the rule does not include substantive standards respecting use or modification of the environment. With that said, obviously we took into consideration the specialty, delicate conversations in regards around ESA species and or wolves in specific. There was dialogue and discussion during our process of creating this in regards to, we currently at present, both on a scientific level within our own agency, in addition to other of our co-managers who do collaring studies currently in those areas. And so that's something that we were able to take that, and I am no expert, but I'd like to provide to you that if that was a further concern, we can absolutely have that discussion. The way that it was described based off of that is that, one, we have a better or clearer idea of where we have these predators located within Washington State, and we're continually getting better at that process. And so for us, this under the current WAC that you see before you, We believe that that would not negatively impact the species. And again, this is up for a regional discussion. So we are within this and the enforcement program, the captain is in charge of defining what that scope and regional level is, in addition to the sergeant who's going to be actively engaged and already understanding and working alongside our complex staff and our wildlife biology to make sure that we do mitigate for those interactions. And so for a much, I think, broader topic or conversation, I think we can have that, but that's the information that I can provide to you today, sir.
Okay, thank you for that answer. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not exactly sure whose hands went up first, but I think it might have been Molly, Commissioner Linville first, Jim Anderson second, and Commissioner Smith following, please.
My Commissioner question, Linville. Sorry, thank you, Chair Carpenter. My question is, do the hounds, men and women, need to live in the district that they would potentially be training in? And the reason that I'm asking that question is because clearly we have a little bit different circumstance in Klickitat County, and which I'm, you know, obviously we need to be thoughtful around that. And so my question would be, if it was determined that there doesn't need to be any more pressure from hounds in Klickitat County, the department has the ability to, I'm asking, I shouldn't phrase that, does the department have the ability to turn down a training permit? Or could they, if they had a really quality hounds person that wanted to, that resided in Klickitat County, could they then maybe train in the adjacent unit or something along those lines? Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Chair. Commissioner Linville, it does make sense and I understand it. And I'd like to reference back to the recommended adjustment that we have on there. We're referencing that more or less spread across the state as training passes itself. So you don't have to technically be a resident of that specific training pass area. Again, like I said, our maps can always be kind of chunked into different pieces all over the place. And so would see potentially, you know, an individual in a county, it'd be across another county line or in another region, which would then define, you know, outside that scope. So absolutely. And to kind of answer that second piece of that is that at any point in this WAC, in the rule language, it clearly states Fish and Wildlife Police have the ability to not give a pass, to revoke a pass, to remove someone from the program itself. There are processes, obviously, for the individual to come back in a both informal and formal process to request to be put back in the program. But in regards to enforcement deciding who and where and when, absolutely the onus is on us. So we will be making that determination based off of that. And obviously, if Captain Wickersham, this is in your neck of the woods, sir, if you'd like to follow up with anything further.
Thank you, Becky. Commissioner Linville, that is correct. We would have the ability to exclude certain areas from the use of this program, PASS program. And here in Region 5 specifically, I can't speak for the other regions. I have a very close working relationship with our wildlife program and our conflict specialist. And before any of this happens, we're going to be having conversations about the where's and when's. And I suspect many of the other captains and sergeants across the state would be having these same conversations through the testimony we've seen here today, as well as written testimony that we've received and written comment. It's very obvious that there needs to be some very strict limits and controls on this. And I hear that loud and clear.
Thank you both.
Okay, Commissioner Anderson, please.
Yes, this is perhaps directed to Joe Pinesco. You know, we've heard some you know, fairly strongly held opinions and suggestions that that this rule would be against the initiatives 655 and the enabling legislation. And you know, my sense is that it is not, that there is the legislature's taken action and given direction to us. But I wanted to ask our attorney that to clarify those points that have been made.
Yeah, I'm happy to address that with a pretty short and easy answer, and you're absolutely correct. The legislature has specifically directed the department, and I'm quoting from the statute, which is 7712-077, to adopt a rule setting out a process and criteria to select persons who may act as agents of the state for purposes of using, and I'm going to start paraphrasing, basically dogs, to hunt or pursue black bear, cougar, or bobcat, to protect livestock, domestic animals, private property, or for public safety. The rule must include requirements for applicants, and the department shall administer a training program to enable persons who have been selected under the first subsection about those qualifications to train dogs for use consistent with this section. So this is a specific legislative mandate in statute, and to the extent anyone insinuates that there's violation of the 1990s, I think, citizen initiatives that implemented the bear baiting and hound hunting bans, this overlays that. And I don't see any facial conflict between them anyhow.
One of the suggestions has been that this rule is not as broad as perhaps the legislature has permitted with regard to rules that might affect bears, et cetera. So by having the rule as framed, is there any inconsistency with the legislative intent, or is it just considered, could it be considered just consistent with the intent, but just not as broad?
I'll say the bottom line, to repeat a statement I made to a commission in a prior public meeting. We are prepared to defend the agency if any legal challenges are brought against the agency for the proposed action. If that, does that answer your question, answering it that way?
Yeah, I guess I just want to feel assured that what we have in front of us is consistent with the legislative intent, and it sounds like it is.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Smith, and then Commissioner Kuntz.
Take my hand down there. Oh, that didn't work. A lower hand. Okay, sorry. Okay, so I have a couple of points, couple of questions, and Joe might be brought back up in at this point. Is there anything in the legislation that would require that this training program be used with live animals, involve live animal pursuit as part of the training program? Because we've heard from, and I've read about a lot of hound training that doesn't occur using live animals, but uses lures, etc. So is there a requirement that this be a pursuit of live animals as the legislation is written?
Yeah, Commissioner Smith, I guess my only pause is this is an area of potential litigation risk, as demonstrated by the scope of public comments. And based upon very recent experiences, I'm a little bit uncomfortable about getting too deep into legal analysis in a public forum where some of that analysis could end up getting quoted and used against the department in a subsequent lawsuit. So if there are deeper questions on legal interpretation issues, that would be something that would be appropriate to take during executive session.
Thanks, Joe. And so that answer you might give to my next point also, which is has to do with SEPA review. So shall I wait on that one as well? Because I think the same might apply.
Yes, I mean, I think Ms. Bennett addressed the SEPA issue directly, and any further discussion on that would also be, would start digging into attorney-client privilege legal advice.
Okay, I'm gonna hold those thoughts then.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Commissioner Kuntz.
Don, I really appreciate your question about the annual review, and Becky, I was very happy to hear you say that we can request, an annual report. And I think that's a good example, Don and Becky, of the current shortcomings in the language. Joe, I regret that I didn't go to law school instead of wildlife school as a new commissioner. And so my understanding, you know, as a biologist is that, yes, we have an obligation to make the rule to, because the legislature has really directed us in that way. But I guess, again, from speaking as a biologist, I think that by not taking a couple more months and trying to tweak the language within the law, we're missing an opportunity to help strengthen the trust that a wider community has in the new program. You know, Becky, I know you and I know all the folks there at the staff. So, you know, it's like, I trust you, okay? But the reality is, and I can say the elephant in the room because I used to work at a zoo, but the elephant in the room is that there's a low level of trust from all angles against the department. And my thought is that the commission really working with the staff, we need to think of, are there ways that we can build trust? And I think one is, you know, not having inflammatory language and speaking civilly, but I think there's some other tools out there. And one is, while it's not a legal requirement and we have to do it within the law, we need Joe's help, but I think we can tweak the language so that it's a little bit more prescriptive and descriptive of the implementation. My experience has been that, you know, when the rubber hits the road, it's not really the rules, it's the implementation of the program. And that's where imaginations run wild sometimes. And that's where, we, you know, I think publicly we have problems and it ends up, you know, in litigation, it ends up with people getting mad and speaking with passion, you know, too much emotion. So, you know, I guess I'm the one that really wants to put forward that we take another couple months and we try one more time to go around and add some language. Again, it probably isn't required by legal direction, but that we do it to try to just ensure more people at all, from all the sides, from the houndsmen to the conservationists to the everybody, that we feel more confident that the implementation is going to be in a direction. And yes, there'll be an annual review. We'll come prepared to, you know, to share lessons learned. I would like to see an annual meeting of all the permittees together. I think it should be more of an adaptive management learning team. And I think it's a big mistake, just as we heard this morning, that the researchers aren't, you know, maybe they're not in the rule, but they should be in an annual meeting with the permittees, because as we heard this morning, you know, this isn't just, we the houndsmen are essential, okay? And we should be very grateful that there's houndsmen and women out there that can help us, not just with human safety, not just when we have to, when it's necessary to respond to depredations, but for carnivore research. So anyway, I think that, you know, this is the direction that I'm leaning, that we really need to take two extra months. But I appreciate very much the staff work on this, and I appreciate the houndsmen and the NGOs that worked on this. And Mr. Woodbury, I share your frustration. 3 years is way, more than 3 years, is way too long to have worked on this. But you know, the rub is the context kept changing. It got dragged out too long. So what I'm asking is 2 more months, we circle back, we try to add some more language that will give people a sense of confidence that the implementation is going to be successful. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, I have 2 commissioners with their hands up. First is Commissioner McIsaac, and then Commissioner Thorburn. I want to remind us all, this is a decision, and we need to get that to that point fairly soon. Commissioner McIsaac, then Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought Commissioner Smith's question was a good one, and I would maybe ask the staff the question, whether during the process of working on this, was it considered any options to use something different than live animals? Is there an option here where something else was suggested and explored or not? And let me say, while they're thinking of the answer, I'll just ask that question and maybe then get back later to the topic that Commissioner Kuntz is bringing up.
Thank you, Commissioner Chair, Commissioner McIsaac. Under the current stakeholder group and that we worked with alongside to develop the initial both RCW and WAC, the suggestion that there would be alternative means other than using cougars itself were not necessarily an option brought forward as a fix for what they currently do. And again, I wish that I could have one of our working dog handlers up here to explain that more clearly than I can. And I'd love to provide that to you as a clear explanation. But in short, if I can butcher this a little bit, is that the reason that these houndsmen and women are not allowed to physically even call on a scent is because it's currently illegal under the rules in Washington state. So they can't even smell a scent. They can't even go towards something like that. For the actual training itself is not necessarily to find and locate an animal. And so I just want to preface that as well, is that with this training activity, it's to even just allow them the ability to actually get onto a cougar scent and to run and train in that format. So it's not necessarily to find and locate and tree a cat. And so again, I want to make sure that that's explained. And then secondly, in regards to the other options, from what I understand, at least having discussions with houndsmen that we currently work with, that's something that is available, but it's not necessarily the most appropriate or the best process in which to go about actually training dogs. And so for me, again, I'd love to provide that to you in more of a complete kind of scope at a later time, if that's something that is a concern or we would like to further discuss.
Thank you.
Commissioner Thorburn, please.
I see that another hand has gone up, but I'm prepared to make a motion. And if there's a second, I will discuss the motion. So hearing no objection, I move to adopt WAC 220-412-130 with the recommended adjustments as presented by staff.
I second that.
We have a motion and a second by Commissioner Linville. Further discussion?
Well, if I could start off, yes, we've certainly been receiving a lot of recent testimony. I appreciate counsel reading the statute. I move to adopt this because the language is quite responsive to the statute. We are directed to establish rules on how to select participants in this training program. That's how I read the rule. Many things have been brought up in recent testimony that are not related to this rule. There are certainly things that are on our plate. What is public safety, the cougar hunting, what's going on in Klickitat County. I feel that the department has followed the standard process for the development of controversial rules, and it's time to move forward. That's the reason I've made the motion.
Okay, who would like to, we got a lot of hands up. I guess Commissioner Linville, you second, and we'll let you go, and then I have, Commissioner Koontz, you had your hand up, now you don't. We have Commissioner Smith, Vice Chair Baker, and Jim Anderson. Go ahead, Commissioner Linville, please.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. This topic for me is, I always like looking for unlikely allies, and I was hoping that this would bring a lot of unlikely allies together. Dogs and cougars are a daily part of my life on the ranch, and there's literally, dogs are the reason that we have cougar conservation on the ranch, and dogs are literally the reason that we don't hunt cougars on the ranch, because we don't need to. And I see a lot of ties in between this training program and what I don't normally call this out, but we get a lot of pressure this way. I am a trained wildlife biologist. I spent almost a decade with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So I only put that out there because we get the pushback that, you know, we aren't listening to the scientists, but I am a scientist. And we use livestock guardian dogs. And we heard today that, oh, if only we could train, you know, people to, you know, do non-lethal protection of livestock. Well, what is that? That is dogs, right? Like, we're trying to avoid using dogs by using other dogs. And I'm not sure if people understand what livestock guardian dogs do, but it's a form of aversion therapy. A mountain lion comes near the livestock and the livestock guardian dogs chase it. And the cougar, it's a non-lethal, thing the cougars learn. And then they associate the bark with this bad experience, because the bad experience is a very important part of the aversion, right? And so then the cougars have the option to not engage the dogs, and they associate people and the dogs. And that's why this works. And so this training program, in my mind, is a form of aversion therapy. The cougars, it saves cougars' lives to learn to avoid people and dogs. It's absolute conservation in my mind. The scientific people say, well, we don't understand the cougar population, we can't census them. This is a way, you know, to get science around animals so we have a better understanding of this really important species. These folks are going to go out of state to train their dogs anyways. And so if it's really, you know, if we're concerned about animal welfare, and they're going to go out of state, does that mean that we don't care about the welfare of the wildlife that they're training on in other states? So if you know, they're going to do it anyways. And so this gives us the ability to put some really important sideboards around that. When we talk about dogs and, you know, can we use something other than live animals? In my mind, this would be like me asking my border collies to only work cattle twice a year and expect them to be calm and precise and do a good humane job of moving cattle. And this, when a dog, oh gosh, working dogs are amazing. They're amazing. And it is in their like hardwired DNA. And so part of the reason for needing to train on live animals is so that it does happen in a humane manner, because when a dog that is hardwired DNA only gets to turn loose to do something once or twice a year, they are not under control and they are not calm, and it will become inhumane to the animal that they're pursuing. And so that's why it's really important for these animals to work on live animals. I understand the optics around this. I think that we heard Tino speak to, gosh, you know, if they saw what a well-performed pursuit looked like, they wouldn't be as upset. I think we see things in movies. We see, you know, Shawshank Redemption and hounds going after prisoners, and this is what we have in our mind. And gosh, I sure understand how that would not feel good to the general public. So I think this is a win for cougar conservation. I think this is a win for the state. And so I am very supportive of this program, and I trust that the department is going to watch over this carefully. And that is the best way for this to go forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Okay, I have three hands up. I think in this order, Commissioner Smith, Commissioner Anderson, and then Vice Chair Baker, please. Commissioner Smith.
You're muted.
Muted.
What I was saying is I'm new to this show. Obviously, I'm new to this show and forget to unmute myself. First of all, just to respond to Molly, you know, I have a livestock guardian dog, Great Pyrenees Aussie mix. I've taught classes in how to use livestock guardian dogs. So I also value that that role of dogs considerably. It's really important. It's a really important tool for that very effort you were talking about in helping to, aversively train predators. But this program, of course, isn't just going to be pursuing problem animals. Most predators, most large carnivores never cause problems, thank God. Imagine if that wasn't the case. So we're going to be pursuing cats that aren't problem cats and don't really need that lesson per se. Just wanted to make that point. But the questions that Joe said he didn't want to answer the public session, I think are very pertinent to at least informing my decision today on the motion that's on the floor. And I'm wondering how to propose that we wait for that vote until after we have the benefit of some legal advice on a couple of points. So I guess that's a question maybe for you, Larry. Can we delay the vote till after we've heard from the attorney?
I don't believe so. It's on our agenda as a decision, and I don't think that would be appropriate. But if Joe has additional comments.
It's an option of the commission if it wished collectively to defer further action on this until an opportunity for executive session on it, that you have the legal flexibility to do that. Commissioner Smith, I mean, I can assure you that as department staff and program staff work on any proposals before bringing them to the commission, they do so jointly working with their assigned attorneys for review and evaluation of risks and compliance with all legal aspects. So those kinds of attorney-client privilege communications happen at the program level all the way up. And then on occasion when the commission has a question about, hey, what was that advice? That is something that we can share. Unfortunate in the timing of this one that it's a topic that's been around for quite a long time and you've newly joined the commission, so you didn't have the opportunity to participate in earlier conversations on those topics.
And if I might add, Commissioner Smith, we cannot take action in executive session. So no, that I makes it yeah. makes it very difficult. So Commissioner,
that's the last thing on the agenda today, isn't it? So that would mean that if we wanted to go that route, we'd have to defer it till a subsequent meeting.
Yeah. Commissioner Anderson.
Yes. We've heard a lot today. We don't always have perfect information. I think that we spent a fair amount of time, the department staff has, as has the commission, reviewing the program. And I believe it's a good program. Is it perfect? I'm sure it's not. And I think the objective has to be that we want this to get improved over time. So I'm leaning go forward with this. I really like the idea of a report where there's an assessment of the kind of the dogs, the hounds, and the hound trainers, and how that work is going. And then also information with regard to interactions of the hounds with cougars in terms of their encounters, frequency, composition, et cetera. And gets to Commissioner Linville's point about the data. Doesn't do much good to have the program if we're not capturing the data and having it organized and having it put together, shared, communicated in a transparent way. And so I like that idea of the report. I like the fact I'd like that to be an annual thing. And Commissioner Kuntz mentioned the idea of some form of information sharing session where there could be a synergy between the different elements that maybe right now find themselves going in different directions. So that's kind of where I'm at in my perspective.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Vice Chair Baker.
Well, I have so much to say about this, and I'm not going to say very much of it for obvious reasons. First off, I think we all agree on one thing, and that is that a very tightly well-run hound pursuit training program is important. Even if we didn't agree on that, the legislature has told us that we have to do it. I think we also agree that if we're going to rely on trained houndsmen and women in this state to protect us and the private property and lands and livestock, that it's only fair to give them a training opportunity. All of that said, when we had the earlier discussion about the initiative, I don't think the point was that we're violating the initiative, because there's a specific and well-defined exemption for us in cases like this to run hounds and to find a problem animal. So we have been given a lot of responsibility by our public to be wise and judicious in the way that we designed this program. The legislature gave us very few sideboards. All that said, when I look at pros and cons of doing something, that's what I do. I mean, it's pretty simple. I do list pros, I list cons. I do not see any reason in the world why we should force a vote today, given the testimony that we've had, the hundreds of letters that we've received, or at least tens, it feels like hundreds. I think that taking a month or two to make very sure that we are serving the will of all the people, including the houndsmen, is the right way to go. I want to say one more thing, which is that our staff have been incredible on this. Some of these quote adjustments came from discussions that Kim and I had with staff, and I really appreciate being taken seriously and having those things worked into the rule. But what I'd like to do right now is make a motion to table this motion for a period of 2 months to give us time to make sure that it's the best that we can do. And I think that what we've seen today is that there's a lot of people who don't think it's the best that we can do.
I second the motion.
You're muted, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Molly. We have a motion by Vice Chair Baker and seconded by Commissioner Kuntz.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner McIsaac, please.
Just to clarify the point of order here, we have a motion on the table, and my understanding of Robert's Rules of Order is that you can offer a substitute motion, or you can offer an amendment to the motion. So a substitute motion is to replace the motion in its entirety. I think that's appropriate, but maybe it might be worth checking with our legal counsel if we're doing this properly.
He's available now.
Chair Carpenter, a follow-up to Don's follow-up.
Okay.
What I was doing in longhand was trying to verbalize Commissioner Kuntz's request prior to the motion to postpone this vote.
Okay, Joe.
Yeah, so the commission has an internal policy document, last updated 2017, which has very, very high level language regarding parliamentary rules. And that high level language does not get into this level of detail of how to proceed. And oftentimes parliamentary procedure is more a means of ensuring just politeness, consistency of order and things, and is not as critically tied to strict legalities. The bottom line legal angle is just to ensure that everybody, it's clear on the record what people are doing and what they are voting on. In this context, a motion, you know, so there was a motion to pass the department's recommended rule, and that is on the table. However, a motion to defer the vote is certainly relevant to that issue. So if as chair you wish to allow that motion, I mean, I guess you could analogize it as a motion to strike or a motion to amend, and the amendment would be just to defer. So I have no legal objection to you proceeding with Commissioner Baker's motion.
Okay. Vice Chair Baker.
Sorry to interrupt. Oftentimes motions to table are not debatable, and I sure don't want to string this out any longer than it needs to go. So whatever you decide, I think a quick vote would be fine.
Okay. Does anyone want to speak to that before I call for the vote on the amended motion? Commissioner Smith.
I just very briefly want to add to that I have, I know that staff looked at the question on this, and I understand that the, you know, loophole, if you want to call it that, the exemption that we're trying to drive this through is for enforcement activities that are generally exempt under SEPA. But I would, you know, I think there's an alternative view that this is not a pure enforcement activity that we are looking to implement here. And that because one is going to be used by this program will also be used by a research biologist, so that's no longer enforcement. And two, because there are potential impacts to state listed endangered species, gray wolves. You know, I have my doubts that this SEPA exemption is a good way to go. So I just wanted to put that out there, kind of adds a little weight to delaying a little bit.
Okay, there are two people with their hands up, and then we will take some action. Commissioner McIsaac and then Commissioner Linville.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. I'd be amenable to considering for a delay if I was convinced there was a good reason that would make it worth it. I think that Commissioner Kuntz's reason is to get a body of people more comfortable that have a perception that might be a little different than the reality. And that's a very tough challenge to deal with in 2 months. And so I'm not convinced that that's a particularly worthwhile reason. I think we've talked about meeting creep, workload management creep, and this would put the workload right back in again. And again, I would want to see a reason why 2 months later that we'd be justified in the delay and what would be gained in that. And I have not heard a very convincing reason so far, from my perspective.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Commissioner Linville.
So my understanding of Robert's rules is that if there is a properly moved and seconded motion on the table, you have to vote on that one first.
Yes, I believe that's correct, but I just got a little confused a few minutes ago about an amended motion, so I'll look for some guidance on that here momentarily. Joe, this is the moment.
All right. I'm trying to open the 2017 internal policy document. So even if Robert's rules does have that language, I don't believe that specific requirement carried forward into the commission's own internal policy document. So I don't think there's a clear dictate on how the commission proceed with that. If the chair chose to call for a vote on the main motion, frankly, I think that would sort of resolve the question, because if some commissioners wanted to delay, then I presume they would vote down the motion to adopt as proceeding. Yeah. So I guess that would be one way to tackle the issue.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go back to the original motion made by Commissioner Thorburn and seconded by Commissioner Linville. Commissioner Smith, did you want to have
I'm on the Planning Commission here in Jefferson County and have been for almost 10 years. And, you know, our practice
according to Robert's rules of order, has always been to first vote on the amending motion and then the underlying motion. That's the way, you know, I always believed it works. Somebody else chimed in there.
I don't know. I don't see anybody else.
So that has his hand up.
Yes. Commissioner Kuntz, please.
I think for practical reasons, it doesn't make any difference whether we just vote on the amendment or the tabling or just go to the, because the reflection of, as you said, Chair Carpenter, will be there. But I want to make a strong suggestion that we just clear whether we're operating by Robert's rules or not, because it's embarrassing. So I think I don't have any objections. I really want to go to the vote. I just want to say again to Commissioner McIsaac, yeah, perception is reality to a lot of people. There is a low level of trust out there. I'm brand new on the commission, and so maybe I'm more optimistic. You know, ask me again in 6 months whether you can change perception, and maybe I'll be differently. But, you know, I'm just asking to circle back one more time, you know, 2 months, and see where we can get, because I have talked to a broader community, and I think that it's not going to be overwhelming to make it better. Will it be perfect? No, these things are never perfect. But I think we can get to a point where we've increased trust. We've responded to all the testimony today, to all the letters we've gotten. And again, I want to just my final statement is, again, I want to be clear. My judgment is that it's essential that the department have a group of houndsmen and women that we can rely on. And I think that really what we're talking about here today is for them to be able to train their dogs. But really there's a whole set of documents and procedures to make this successful. And so this is, you know, we kind of are doing it backwards, to be honest. It should really start with what is our policy on deciding when a conflict is solved by lethal take. And I would suggest one thing at a time, calm down, delay for 2 months, try to tweak it a little bit better. And in 2 months, if we haven't been able to make it better, then we'll pass it as it is.
Thank you. Joe Pinesco, please.
Thank you. So I did finally get the policy document open. And so one clarification on what the commission's own internal policy states with respect to parliamentary procedure. If there is a motion to amend a motion, then that must be seconded before discussion occurs. And that is supposed to be voted on prior to going back to the underlying motion. I guess the question is what exactly is a motion to table for 2 months? Is that really a motion to amend or not? It sort of falls in between, or no, it's not. You know, in my legal analysis, the parliamentary procedure issues are not ultimate legal flaws on what the commission does. They're there to help the commission get through with the process. So as long as you can get through the process and everybody understands what they're doing, that's my ultimate legal concern, to be able to defend your actions.
Okay.
So I'm not going to tell you what to do, in other words.
All right. Well, Fred, I guess it is embarrassing, but this is pretty important, and trying to get it right is near impossible. But I do agree with Joe. I was waiting to hear that the amended motion will be called up first. That's what I remember happening historically. So we have an amended motion from Vice Chair Baker. Would you restate the motion?
My motion is to postpone this vote to a date certain, 2 months from now on our regular meeting, to give us a chance to make sure that we are this WAC is as perfect as it can be.
Okay, and we had a second by Commissioner Kuntz. All right, a call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Okay, Nikki, will you please poll the commissioners? Nikki, are you there?
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to jot down fast. So okay. I've got no for Baker, Smith, Kuntz, and then I've got yes for Jim, Kim, Molly. I didn't catch everything.
I think you got it backwards.
Yeah, I think I was going to say.
Yeah, sorry.
Get this right because it has
yes. Yes to the amendment is Baker, Smith, and Kuntz. And no to the amendment is Jim, Kim, Molly. And I didn't catch you, Larry.
I don't vote unless there's a tie normally.
Well, we're 3-on-3.
Commissioner McIsaac voted no.
Okay.
Okay.
So I've got 4-3.
Okay. The noes have it.
Right.
We will now go back to the original motion made by Commissioner Thorburn and seconded by Commissioner Linville. Commissioner Thorburn, because it was an hour ago, would you be kind enough to restate it?
I move to adopt WAC 220-412-130 with recommended adjustments as presented by staff.
Okay, and we had a second by Commissioner Linville. Call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
No.
Okay. No.
Okay, Nikki, let's go ahead and count them again, please, because maybe we start raising our hands, I guess.
I still have four. I have four for yes for the motion, and I've got three for no.
Okay. All right. The motion is passed. That concludes agenda item four. And I do want to say thank you to the staff. This is gut-wrenching and difficult work, but I compliment you for the effort put forward, and I fully expect that we will be asking for a lot of information and briefings going forward. So thank you for that. Before I go to the next agenda item, I see Commissioner Kuntz has a hand up.
Yes, Chair Carpenter, I just wanted to thank you for chairing that difficult dilemma, but also I wanted to thank the staff and the whole group, the Houndsmen, everybody that worked on it. And I also want to thank the commissioners, because being a new commissioner, I really appreciate how we had the full discussion, and that, you know, I think even though perhaps my vision of changing the rules didn't happen, I think a lot of good ideas came out, and I think Becky heard those. And I think moving forward, you know, I feel that the implementation will consider those. And I think that's a great thing. And I think that's why we have these difficult conversations, even in a packed agenda. So thank you, everyone.
Fred, thank you, Commissioner Kuntz. Thank you for your comments. It's not easy sometimes.